isn't common sense supposed to be common? The struggle is real, my friends. The Kate Daly Show starts now.
I married a woman who loves to camp, and I am what you would call indoorsy. I'm surprised we can still get people to camp. Hey, want to burn a couple of vacation days sleeping on the ground outside? No. You'll wake up freezing, covered in a rash. All right, I'll go. My wife always brings up, camping's a tradition in my family. Hey, it was a tradition in everyone's family till we came up with the house.
Oh, man, I love Jim Gaffigan. I'm glad you're joining me for the last hour of the show on a Friday. You know I love Fridays, favorite day of the week. Welcome back. You can go to katedalyradio.com for the podcast of the show. You can also email me, Kate, at katedalyradio.com. And by the way, did I mention next week I have Roger Stone and Dennis Prager coming on. I have a couple whistleblowers about what's going on with Assange and also, well, just a couple. I mean, great guests next week, what's going on in China. And then I have Ted Nugent coming on in May. And he is a trip. He is so fun. So fun to talk to. So he will be a blast. And I'm excited to have him on as well, coordinating just a ton of interviews right now. Roger Stone and talk show host Dennis Prager will be great next week. And we'll get a bird's eye into all kinds of truth rather than the media mainstream propaganda crapola that they're always trying to sell. So I welcome you, listeners all around the world and live right now. In fact, I have a great guest. I can't wait to bring him on. Andrew Harrington, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi there. Yeah, I'm actually glad to have you. This is a great topic and really timely for right now. Andrew's resume is long. So I'm going to try and get to the highlights. Avid outdoorsman, lifetime of experience roaming the wilderness, from the outback of Australia to the wilds of Alaska. He's done it. He's been there. Probably wrestled a bear or two. Am I right?
I did punch a bear in the face one time.
You did not? I was kidding. Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. No, I had one come in my tent up at Ikaniku Gap years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, and so the thing we tell people with bears is, like, you just have to be really aggressive. And so
wow.
A bear was poking his head through my tent, so I punched in the face. I got out, had my, you know, I was actually hunting hogs that night beforehand, so I had my shotgun, got out, started yelling at the bear and running off into the sow and three cubs. But,
oh, my
yeah,
gosh.
So my claim to fame is that I punched a bear in the face.
I had no idea. I had no idea when I just said that. All right. So there's that, obviously. And then for some reason, I have music still playing. Okay. So I also wanted to mention that you're a rescue team leader, tracking instructor, emergency medical technician, basically have firsthand knowledge on everything from outdoor emergency start, all kinds of survival training. You even do survival training for people going on these reality shows too, which is kind of interesting to me. You are head of the specialized backcountry search and rescue teams. And in fact, you were almost dealing with a bear today. And I'm actually glad you're not having to deal with them so you could do this interview, because there's so much to learn from you. I could go on and on, but you deal with herbal remedies and all kinds of hunter-gatherer, all kinds of issues. And I want to start off with this. Let's go here first. A lot of people might be camping and are going into maybe the mountains for maybe the only 10th time of their life, because maybe we only camp so often. I don't know how much people camp, but I know I come from an area where camping is common. And so with that being said, just even coming across a bear, I heard that you're supposed to bark or howl. Is that true?
We recommend people yell at them. It all depends on the bear's behavior, right? So most of our bears here in the Smokies, we have black bears here, and assuming where you are too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the first thing is to observe the bear's behavior, you know, and
okay.
So a good bear, you know, which is a wild bear, if it sees you, smells you, or hears you, it takes off running, right?
Right.
The bear that doesn't is a bear that's going to be habituated to people, right? And so
okay.
It's going to exhibit a couple different behaviors. If it starts popping its jaws, stamping its feet, or huffing, then it's a defensive behavior. So at that time, you want to kind of back off slowly, you know, don't turn your back and run.
Okay.
But just, you know, kind of just let the bear know you're there and just kind of ease off. It's being defensive. It's telling you, like, hey, don't get any closer.
Hmm. Okay.
If the bear's got its head down and is kind of walking towards you slowly, then that's kind of like an offensive behavior. And in that situation, you want to appear larger. You want to be very, very aggressive. Throw sticks, throw rocks, yell at it. You know, it's always better to hike in a group, more mm-hmm. people. You know, bear attacks typically don't happen to larger groups. And so mm-hmm. in that situation, everybody's going to want to yell. Everyone's going to want to throw rocks and sticks. Basically, you just want to run it out of there. It's a big dominance thing with black bears.
Okay.
Grizzly bear is a different story. You can't be more dominant than a grizzly bear. But
okay. So is the howling thing a myth? Howl like a dog? Is that a myth?
Yeah. I mean, you can howl. You can scream.
Okay.
You can cuss it. You can do whatever you want. The big thing is just be aggressive, right? So just switch
That's
into
true.
That mindset that it is like a dog in your yard. If you want to get a dog out of your yard, what do? You go out and get out of here, you know,
right.
run it off. So.
Okay. I love that. And I think people, honestly, I don't think we know how to. So that was actually super helpful because I don't know what the stances that a bear takes. And so I actually found that incredibly helpful to know or understand what we're up against. I think people think if you exhibit offensive, on the offense, that kind of behavior, that they're going to get more angry. So that's good to know that actually can help you in that situation. They might turn around and
yeah.
flee. Okay. Good to know.
We've had bears in our mm-hmm. park, which have, followed people down the trail and actually, like, pushed on their backpack to get them to drop their backpack, you know. And once
mm-hmm.
they drop their backpack, they get rewarded, you know.
yeah.
So in that sense, you don't want to, you know, the bear's trying to get an easy reward from you, you know, in that regard. So the bottom line is run the bear out of there. You know, we have 500,000 acres here in the Smokies, and if you're at a campsite,
mm-hmm.
you know, consider that 1 acre your territory. There's 499,000 acres they can go to, and run it out of there with rocks, sticks, whatever you got to do.
Excellent. Good to know. You know, I know you deal with a lot of search and rescue. I know you deal with a lot of people going camping and maybe first timers. They went off to Big Five. They got a bunch of stuff and they're on their way to go camping. What are some of the biggest mistakes they make?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to preparation. You know,
mm-hmm.
the old Boy Scout motto, be prepared. And so the way I teach my classes is I usually break it down into three categories, mindset, skills, and gear.
Mm-hmm.
And so the mindset part is like, hey, when you're out there, you know, the person that's responsible for your safety is you. You know, so a lot of people have this myth like, hey, I'm going to be able to call 911. Helicopter is going to come in. They're going to send rangers down from the sky, pick me up, and fly me out of here.
right.
Well, sometimes we can do that, but mm-hmm. there's a lot of times we can't, right? Whether the weather's bad or whether we can't mm-hmm. Fly a helicopter that day. I mean, it's all dependent. And so if you're 8 miles in the backcountry and you call 911, like, it's literally going to take hours for anybody to get to you. So understanding that reality, if you're hiking, you know, let's say you get lost and you get off trail, and it becomes dark, well, we do something called a search urgency rating where we evaluate what type of gear you have, where you're at, your experience, and we use that to mitigate risk for our own searchers, right?
Mm, okay.
And so we may put people on trail that night, but there's a pretty good chance we're not sending people off trail that night if we don't know your location.
Mm.
And so understand, like, hey, if I get lost, I'm off trail, and it's going to be dark, then I'm probably going to be spending the night out. You know,
okay.
that's just
and
the
stay
reality
put.
Of that situation.
Stay put as much as you can.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the whole thing with staying put, that's good if someone knows where you're heading.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you left a trip plan, which I always tell people to do.
Right.
Sometimes people that have hiked out, you know, tried to self-rescue
mm-hmm.
have done a good job as well. So it's hard to say. There's one rule, you know, I always tell people evaluate your situation and
mm-hmm.
then determine what the best course of action is.
Okay. And what's the best way to keep warm? Let's say you're lost, you have nothing, didn't even have a jacket, because for some reason we lose all of our marbles and common sense when we go hiking sometimes. We don't bring any water or any clothing. And so you're lost, you know you're going to spend the night. What do you do? How do you keep warm?
Yeah, so first of all, I'd say, why do you not have a jacket? Right?
Well, there's the obvious.
And so this is a serious
right.
question, because people always ask me, like, well, what would you do if you didn't have this? What would you do
yeah.
if you didn't have that? I was like, why didn't you have that? So, well, because I didn't bring it. Well, why didn't you bring it? Well, because, you do the five whys, and you basically get down to, like, I'm not prioritizing it, right?
Right,
and so
right.
once again, it goes back to the mindset, skills, and gear. You know, the skills part is the training. The gear part is, like, hey, be prepared to spend the night out, in whatever weather conditions it is, you know?
Sure.
So even in the summertime, I carry a puffy jacket in my backpack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you did screw up, and let's say you set your pack down, this is a scenario that I would say. You set your backpack down, you go to walk down to the spring or to use the bathroom, you come back and your pack is gone, right?
Okay.
Because the bear grabbed it and ran off with
sure.
it. This happens a lot here.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're out there and you don't have your backpack and you don't have, you know, your sleeping bag or your jacket or anything like that, and you got to stay warm. So that's when it comes down to what I recommend is always carrying life-saving gear on you, which would be a garbage bag and a way to start a fire.
Okay.
You know, if garbage bag weighs an ounce and a half, everybody can carry it.
That's
cheap.
True.
You can make a hole in it for your head. You can pull it over you. Now you've got a good water-resistant, wind-resistant barrier, and you build a fire, sit down, and wait for the search and rescue teams, because hopefully you did a trip plan and people know where you are.
Man, I've never even thought about that. You could stick one of those in your pocket. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Easily.
I mean, even trail runners. Like
garbage
people
sack.
That come through my class and trail runners, I'm like, hey, look, carry a contractor-sized garbage bag, carry a lighter wrapped with duct tape, because duct tape burns really well for tinder.
Okay.
And then carry a pressure dressing for splinting your ankle or something like that. So.
Oh, my gosh, you could carry those things on you, and you can put a garbage sack in one of your kids' pockets very easily and have that on them, right? And take five minutes to train them on what to do.
Yeah, now for kids, I always recommend like orange garbage bags because they're very high visibility.
Okay.
For adults, typically I'll say clear garbage bags. Because when you build a fire about, you know, two steps away from you, that radiant heat will pass through the garbage bag kind of like a greenhouse, and it will actually kind of heat up inside the garbage bag for you.
So an orange one?
Orange one for kids, clear for adults, yeah.
Clear for adults. What a great tip.
Clear for
adults
allows that kind of greenhouse effect of the heat from the fire passing through that.
Oh, excellent. Does a black garbage sack, does that work that much less?
No,
or?
That stops that radiant heat from passing through there.
Oh, it does. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So that's a good one. You know, I've never thought about this. See, this is why I have you on the show. Andrew Harrington is joining me. He's from the BigPigOutdoors.com. Big Pig, as in the animal, BigPigOutdoors.com. On his website, there are so many great articles and all kinds of things. Things like he's talking about right now that really could save your life. If you and your family are going out hiking and camping, this would be such a fantastic thing to make sure you have on your person the entire time. We're going to hit a break. And when I come back, I want to talk to you about survival. If something major happened, and I'm talking a major thing happened, and you found yourself trying to escape by maybe going into the mountains, and I know you've trained people on reality shows. I know you've trained people on how to survive. I want to know some of these tips. This is great stuff, Andrew. We'll be right back on the Kate Daly Show. What a fun Friday. Be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Times have changed and times are strange. Here I come, but I ain't the same. Mama, I'm coming home.
Don't you just love that for a Mother's Day song? it's a Mother's Day weekend this weekend, so just reminding you if you forgot, you know. And welcome back to the Kate Daly Show. So glad you're joining us. And I have, when I say us, I have a fantastic guest. That's why I'm not talking about myself in the plural. So glad to have Andrew Harrington, who is a wildlife expert. I could have no better expert on the show than Andrew. He is fantastic and has such a resume. I didn't even mention even an eighth of his resume on the things he's done. He's even trained people for reality shows for being able to go out and live in the mountains and understand more about survival and more about keeping yourself safe too. A lot of people are going to be starting to camp and go out and enjoy, and we always have accidents. We always have people that will do really dumb random things, maybe just because they don't know, they're not prepared. Andrew comes to us. The website is Big Pig Outdoors with an S, BigPigOutdoors.com, and you can find out so much more about Andrew, all of the things he teaches. He brings groups up, and it's just amazing to watch his huge. This is a. You've been everywhere. You've done everything. I can't even give you justice, Andrew, because you've done so much. But I want to talk just a little bit about gear and maybe the difference between romanticizing kind of the myths about romanticizing being in the outdoors and actually the reality of being in the outdoors and survival gear. What would you do? What would you need to put in a backpack? Things like that.
Sure, and, you know, I'll talk from my personal experience. You know, growing up, I was real big into, like, primitive living skills, you know, so that's the making the arrowheads and baskets and brain tan buckskin, and, you know, because that's what I kind of thought survival was about. And then I went through this bushcraft phase where I was wearing all-wool clothes and going to Canada and training with the big guys up there and carrying an axe everywhere I went and burning big fires in a pot and all that stuff. And then when I started to work for the Park Service and get involved in search and rescue, I started to see, hey, there's a disconnect between what I learned at Boy Scouts and the books I read and the videos I've seen and the courses I've been. There's a disconnect between that and what I'm actually seeing go on in the real world. And so the first thing I try and tell people is, like, we have to define the context of wilderness survival, right?
Okay.
A lot of people say, oh, I'm going to teach you wilderness survival skills, and they're teaching, you know, basketry and all that kind of stuff. Well, right. My definition is a life-threatening emergency in a remote area. And so if we're looking at skills we need to train for, if we're looking at gear we need to pack, or just how we're going to train our mind for this situation, it has to fit in that context. So, you know, in today's day and era, being able to make a bow and arrow and, you know, nap out some arrowheads and stuff is not really a survival skill. That's more of a primitive living skill. And it's great to get you out in touch with nature, and great skills to keep alive. But when someone that you love is laying there with a broken ankle and that you need to splint, or they've got a arterial bleed and you need to stop that, that is a survival skill.
Okay.
When someone in your family is hypothermic and you need to warm them up with a hypothermic burrito wrap, that is a survival skill. Mm-hmm. And the same thing goes with gear. You know, when we start looking at gear, we have to say, hey, is this item that I'm going to be carrying, because it's going to be weight on our back,
right,
does this fit into this context of being able to keep me or my family alive in a wilderness survival scenario?
See, I love this. And you're right. I hadn't really thought about the division of all of these things either. I know for myself, we have packs that we can grab. If something were to happen, we have a pack we can grab and go out and hopefully be okay and have the things that we need. But I think people wonder, do they have the right things? I mean, if you were suddenly having to flee somewhere because something major disaster, major something happened, and let's say you had to go up into the hills or up into the mountains, and all you had was this backpack of stuff, what would you recommend people having?
Well, you know, coming from a statistical side, right, the most likely event that you're going to have happen to you when you're in the wilderness is an injury, right?
Okay.
So obviously a good first aid kit.
Okay.
And then one that's set up for trauma and all for kind of all the boo-boo stuff, you know, so that's going to be the cuts to the hand. The boo-boo stuff is cuts to the hand, you know, gastrointestinal stuff. You know, bee stings, you know, all that kind of stuff, all the boo-boo stuff. Now, trauma typically happens in the wilderness from you falling or something falling on you, or you're in some type of vehicle, whether it's a mountain bike or a car or a truck, and you hit something. And so that's the type of trauma you need to be able to deal with. So statistically, you know, most of the stuff we see recreationally, their situation is going to be an injury-related thing. And after that, it's going to be they get lost.
Okay.
So to spend the night out in the woods with minimal gear. In the scenario that you're talking about, well, we can kind of extrapolate and say, well, hey, if you're going to run up into the woods to kind of escape some type of natural disaster, some type of situation like that, well, you're probably going to be susceptible to the exact same type of stuff. You know, the twisted ankles, the broken wrists, you know, the knife cuts to the hand, all that kind of stuff. So first and foremost, I would say a good first aid kit, and then also the training that goes along with it. You know, I have doctors on my search and rescue team. I have special forces medics. I got paramedics. I got EMTs, first responders, the whole way down. But everybody, if they just go take a good 2-day wilderness first aid class, that's going to get you ready for 90 probably like 90% of the stuff you're going to be dealing with out there.
Okay.
Typically, it's going to be, you know, package and go most of the time. So.
Good idea. And so let's say you were there for 3 or 4 days, and you only had so much food that you could pack in your backpack. And, of course, you're thinking about fire. You're thinking about all of these things when you're packing your backpack. But let's just say you ran out of food. What would you do? And let's say you didn't pack any tools, or let's say maybe a recommendation from you on what to pack as far as tools go.
Yeah, so as far as food goes, for short-term survival is not an issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so most of us have enough body fat on us so that we can last out there a month.
And
no
more.
And so every pound
year.
I'm sorry?
A year. Go ahead.
Yeah, so every pound of fat you have on you is 3,500 calories. You know,
wow.
So if we take your weight, like we'll just take mine as an example. I'm 200 pounds. So
mm-hmm.
if we take that, multiply by 10,
okay.
My basal metabolic rate is around 2,000 calories a day. You
mm-hmm.
know, and so if I just sit around, stay warm, stay hydrated. Every pound of fat I have on me is about a day and a half's worth of rations, right?
Okay.
Typically I recommend fasting for most people in a survival situation. You know, we're not talking about the natural disaster, you know,
mm-hmm.
Prepping kind of scenario. Because the, like, 94% of wilderness emergencies are resolved within 12 hours.
Okay.
You know, and so... You know, when someone has 30 days worth of food around their belly,
mm-hmm.
even if their event lasts a week, you know, there's a margin of error there of 3 weeks, you know.
Okay.
So it's not that big a deal. And after 3 days of fasting, your body switches over. You're not even hungry anymore. You have a lot more energy. It's just kind of
That's
a mindset
point.
Thing. A lot of people think, oh, if I go without food for 24 hours, I'm going to starve. I'm like, well, no, really, you got about 60 days worth of rations on you. But.
That's so true. I haven't thought about that because you would probably going up there just to, well, I've got this much food, so start eating now. But really, don't.
Yeah.
Is the
and
message.
So,
yeah.
You know, the other thing with that is, like, you watch these reality TV shows, and they show them catching lizards and
mm-hmm.
eating minnows, and they make this meal, like, oh, man, they're getting all this food. Well, if you do the math on it, math doesn't lie, right?
Right.
They're getting, like, you know, a couple hundred calories, if that, if they're mm-hmm. lucky, right?
Right.
And so they're not even meeting their basal metabolic rate. So they're just, you know, they're just burning fat on the shows most of the time. It's just a starvation game.
Yeah.
And so the thing you're not factoring is every time you leave camp, every time you go try and trap a squirrel or you know, spear a fish or anything like that, you're exposing yourself to risk, right?
Sure.
And so that could be falling down and breaking your wrist, could mm-hmm. be falling down and you know, spraining your ankle, could be getting bit by some animal you're trying to trap.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're just going to take your event in a, you know, wilderness survival event and compound it and make it an actually a worse event. You know, because what we see a lot of times is, you know, it's not just one big event. It's a series of small bad decisions and small events that lead up into a larger scenario, you know? Like,
okay.
Hey, you forget to tell someone where you're going, and then
right.
you get out there, and like, oh, hey, you forgot your cell phone, and then guess what? Then now you sprain your ankle, and guess what? You don't have a flashlight. So it's just all these small little things that lead up to, like, crap, now I'm probably going to die.
Great. Wow. You know, I know you train sometimes for reality shows and things. What? I can't even imagine what that's like, and I'm sure you have a lot of funny stories about that, but what are some of the biggest things that you've seen that you just shake your head at with people not knowing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're just back to the food stuff. I mean, when I train the contestants for these shows, I'm like, look, the best thing you can do right now is start eating coconut oil and peanut butter, right? So
oh.
fatten up. And so, you know, in a case example, one of the girls I trained, she, you know, I got her to put on 20 pounds of fat before she went to Panama. She was there 21 days.
Right.
She lost 26 pounds, so she came back and she was
about,
you know,
the same.
6 pounds lighter.
Wow.
If she had not done that, she would have had a miserable time because she wouldn't have had any energy.
Mm-hmm.
She would have been, you know, just really hurting. But yeah,
that's
she made it all 21 days. She did a great job.
Oh,
and that's like,
goodness.
I mean, she had really had no business going because she only trained it for a couple of days. But.
Oh, no. What did she struggle with the most? 21 days in the wilderness.
Yeah, I think the bugs got to her pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then just the dynamics of the partner situation. So
okay.
It was a show where they're partnered up with someone, and the guy she was with was a total jerk. So.
Okay. And so when she was out there for 21 days, were there things that she came back with? Did you talk to her after where she went, I had no idea I was going to have to deal with this, and this became a huge, huge, big deal? Apart from the relationships, just living out in the wilderness.
Yeah, just the nonstop work. You know, there's a reason
that's
we live in houses nowadays,
mm-hmm.
Kind of like that intro you had.
Yeah.
You know, there's a reason we have grocery stores, agriculture, and all that stuff, because when you're living off the land, it's a full-time job.
That's true.
I mean, you're constantly sourcing calories, looking for calories. And so it's a never-ending struggle. And trying to stay warm, you know. So
right.
you're burning a fire all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's
just
true.
Just the challenges of just staying clean out there as well. You know?
Okay. And then what about water? Do you recommend like a water filter that people should always have on hand if they were going to go on?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The one that I carry is the Sawyer Mini Filter.
Okay.
That's a great one. It's like 20 bucks. And that's most of the through hikers on the AT, that's what they carry. It weighs 2 ounces, does 100,000 gallons before it's done.
What's the name of it?
You can throw it in your pack. And then I always carry... What I always tell people on gear is the acronym I follow is PACE acronym, right? Primary, alternate, contingency, emergency.
Okay.
So my primary water filter is that little Sawyer mini filter. My alternate is going to be some chlorine dioxide pills that are in my first aid kit. My contingency is a steel canteen that I can boil water in. And then emergency is just drink the water.
Okay.
And so that's what we see a lot here is I've actually rescued people and they're dehydrated and they're sitting by a creek. And I say, hey, you know, why didn't you drink from the creek? And I said, well, I didn't want to get sick. And so at least in our region, you know, third world countries a little bit different, the latency period of the pathogens is about a week to a week and a half. So we can treat someone that's infected, but we can't treat you if you're dead, you know. And so,
so true.
When we start looking at dehydration, you know, you get about 3 days without water and you're going to start going down, at least in our region. Now, where you're at, it's going to be a lot faster
right.
because it's a lot more arid.
But if you drink it, what you're saying is if you drink it, you probably wouldn't be getting sick for a while. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah, you'll be rescued, hopefully, before you get sick.
That's a good point.
Even if you get sick, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, these are the things I honestly, I'm learning so much from you. I hadn't thought of these things. I'm talking with Andrew Harrington. Talk about the foremost expert on this in the country. You can go to bigpigoutdoors.com, bigpigoutdoors.com. Can you join me for one more segment?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I love this. And we'll be right back in just a few minutes. But he's answering so many of my questions. I absolutely love this. You know I'm going to have you back, too, because there's so many directions we could go in, not only prepping and survival and all of those things, but even like we're talking about right now, too, is camping and surviving. Great stuff, Andrew. Be right back. More with Andrew Harrington when we come back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
His 27th year, coming home to a place he'd never been before. Left yesterday behind him, you might say he was born again. Might say he found the key for every door. When he first came to the mountains, his life was far away.
Hi there. You know I had to play some John Denver because, you know, I play guitar, right? And when I go camping, this is like some of the first music that comes up, is it not? It always reminds me of the mountains, and wasn't he all about that? So I welcome you back, and what a fun Friday show, and I'm learning so much from the great Andrew Harrington, who is just an amazing survivalist and a wilderness expert. He works in this day in, day out, and he's been doing this for a very long time, and his resume is a mile long. But he is at bigpigoutdoors.com, bigpigoutdoors.com, and you can learn so much from him. I mean, we really can't cover in an hour what people need to know, but there are so many great tips, and that is drink the water in the creek because you'll die before you'll ever be hit with an illness from it. And also, if you're going to go hiking, and a lot of people go hiking and camping, that one of the best things you could do, and I thought this is such a brilliant tip, Andrew, is to stick a garbage sack, probably an orange one if it's little kids, a clear one if it's you, and stick a garbage sack in your jeans, in the pocket of your jeans, because you can use that as an overnighter to cover yourselves, to create some heat source under that, direct that fire, and you know, underneath, so you're getting that heat. Also, he said a whistle. Make sure that you put a whistle on your kids around their neck, right?
Yeah, I mean, when you put a whistle around a kid's neck, make sure it's on a breakaway lanyard so they don't get choked on some vegetation.
Sure.
Or kind of like a wrist lanyard would be good, too.
Okay, that's a great tip.
Just on the water, you know, we say drink the water only if you don't have any way to disinfect it, right?
Okay.
So you don't have a filter, you don't have a way to boil it, you don't have water purification pills.
Right.
If it comes down to that, then definitely don't let yourself get dehydrated.
Okay.
Go ahead and drink the water in that scenario.
Okay. Now, you said, was it a sore water? Was that what it was called? The one of your choice that you like?
Yeah, the Sawyer Mini Filter.
Sawyer, okay. Okay, just making sure the name.
S-A-W-Y-E-R.
Oh, Sawyer, okay. Excellent to know, because I know a lot of people are probably wondering. And also, you know, as people are out there, and if you find yourself in a survival mode or not, I mean, what are some of the other tips that you find that people are just don't know, and you just wish that you could just, even if you just had 10 minutes with somebody, what you would want them to know?
So sleep. You know,
okay.
That's one of the things when we were talking about the contestants on those shows. You know, the thing about sleep is if you go 24 hours without sleep, you basically have the mental ability of someone with a 0.08 blood alcohol level, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you're making decisions like you're drunk. So when you're in a survival situation or some type of emergency in that scenario, always think about, you know, making your shelter so you can get a good night's sleep. You know,
okay.
So don't skimp on the bed. I tell this to people in my class, like, spend a lot of time making a good, comfortable bed because that's going to determine your level of rest. You know, if you can sleep through the night,
mm-hmm.
That means that you've treated your injuries, you're probably warm, you're probably hydrated, and so you're doing pretty well. So always have that as your goal, to get a good night's sleep.
Okay.
You know, so that's one thing.
You don't have a bag.
Don't talk about that.
If you don't have a bag, and what about shelter, and what would you want to sleep on? You wouldn't want to sleep on the ground. What would you want to have under you that from the wilderness that you would put under you and somehow do some sort of shelter-ish kind of thing? What would you do?
Yeah, so first thing that I recommend people do is, once again, we go back to being prepared, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in my backpack and all the guys on my search and rescue team, we carry what we call a bivy pad, and it's a cut-down sleeping pad, right? And so
okay.
It weighs about 6 ounces. If you get on my website and go to my blog, you can just type in Big Pig Blog and bivy pad. You can see how to make one.
Okay.
But that's just a foam pad that you can put on the ground. It's going to insulate you from the ground, so that's very easy to do. Then you can use it to make splints in a first aid situation.
Okay.
If you don't have that, or even if you want to supplement that, then the couple things that we're going to be looking at is making a big pile of leaves here in our hardwood forest. We use cattail leaves, pine needles, dry grass,
mm-hmm.
And if you have to use pine boughs, we can do that as well. So
the main thing
is, when you're looking for the amount of material to insulate from the ground, you want at least 4 to 6 inches.
Oh, okay.
And that's compressed with your body weight. So a lot of people will put about a foot of leaves down, they'll lay on it, and it'll compress down to like an inch. So
mm-hmm.
if you're using hardwood leaves out here in the East Coast, it's going to be a 2.5 foot pile of leaves before it actually insulates you from the ground.
Oh, wow. Good to know. And especially, I mean, if it's really, really cold, and I mean really cold, and you know you're not equipped, what can you do?
Yeah, so first of all, once again, be equipped.
Exactly. There's the message.
Yeah, so, you know, carry clothing. You know, when we talk about that PACE acronym, primary,
mm-hmm.
alternate, contingency, emergency, your first primary shelter system is your clothing, right? So
right.
If you have a good, adequate clothing system to spend the night out in that weather, you can pretty much just hang out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Alternate, I carry a quilt in my backpack. It's a Primaloft quilt. Weighs 14 ounces. So between that and my puffy jacket, I've slept out down into the 20s.
Okay.
And the weight penalty on that is very little.
Mm-hmm.
Contingency, and that's when we start talking about making super shelters in my
mm-hmm.
class.
Okay.
And that's where we have a 9x12 plastic drop cloth. We make a shelter system. It's clear plastic. We build a fire about 2 steps away. That clear plastic allows the radiant heat from the fire to pass through like a greenhouse and
mm-hmm.
heats it up. So it can be 5 degrees outside, and we can have it 80 degrees inside the shelter.
Okay.
And then emergency, that's when you're piling up a big pile of debris, like you're making the bed out of it and crawling inside that. But,
okay.
You know, crawling in a big pile of leaves is not a great plan, you know, especially if you're hypothermic, because you're just going to be a hypothermic patient in a big pile of leaves. or if the leaves are wet.
I love Andrew.
You're crawling wet leaves, it's going to suck the energy
right.
out. So once again, You know, a lot of times what we see is people get in these situations when they're on day hikes and they don't have the gear.
True.
If we just change our mindset and say, hey, even though I'm going day hiking, I need to be able to spend the night out, then it changes the whole context.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
And we're going to start to carry that gear, even if that's just a puffy jacket and a garbage bag that'll get you through the night.
Okay.
Won't be the most comfortable night. I've spent the night in garbage bags plenty of times. Not the best night, but guess what? You make it through. So
that's so true. Okay, I have a couple scenarios for you. Yep. I'm walking along on the trail, and all of a sudden I come across a rattlesnake, and I know it's all coiled up. What do I do?
Yeah, don't step on it. I've done that. I got bit about 2005. I got bit by a rattlesnake, and that
Ouch.
Was fun.
Jeez.
So, you know, when it comes to snakes in our country, mm-hmm. We don't want to put any type of pressure dressing, like to kind of localize the venom or anything like that. You know, Australia is a little bit different. That's where they do pressure bandages over there.
Mm-hmm.
So don't put on any tourniquets or anything like that. Obviously, you want to remain calm.
Mm-hmm.
At least our rattlesnakes out here on the East Coast, I know you guys got some ones mm-hmm. out there that are a little bit more deadly.
Right.
But here, the best thing you can do is get to medical help, right? And
okay.
So in the scenario, I get asked a lot, this question a lot, actually, is if I can't get cell phone service and I don't have a spot messenger or a personal locating beacon or anything like that, what's my best plan?
Mm-hmm.
And then the best plan in that scenario is to slowly walk towards the trailhead, right? Because
okay.
the faster you get out of there to emergency care, the better off you're going to be. So
okay.
nice and calm, unless you've got someone you can send for help. You know?
Okay.
But if you're by yourself, that's the question I get asked. What if I'm by myself, I get bit by a rattlesnake? Well, I was by myself, I got bit by a rattlesnake, and you know, I hiked out, got in the mm-hmm. truck, drove back to the ranger station, then drove myself to the emergency room.
So. Okay. And then, so, you know, if you see a rattlesnake, is there anything you can do to diffuse this? Like you had with the bear, is there anything you can do in that situation to diffuse it or get out of there?
Yeah. Quickly. I mean, you don't have to, like, people throw rocks and they mm-hmm. get all crazy about rattlesnakes. I mean, just give them the space, right?
Right.
Like, a lot of times you'll hear them, you know, or maybe see them and stuff. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of bites are dry bites, too. So
okay.
just because you get bit doesn't mean you got envenomated.
Okay.
Hard word for me to say.
Sure.
But when you actually get the venom, like, you'll know it because it burns.
Okay.
You'll feel it.
You'll feel it. What about a cougar? All of a sudden, you come up on a cougar, and people have had this happen so much on a hike, going through the mountains. They don't think they're going to encounter one, but all of a sudden, you see an animal that's very, very quick and can get you very quickly. What would you do?
Yeah. The same thing goes back to bears, the predatory attack. You know, make yourself seem larger than you
okay.
are. You know, obviously, if you're in a group, that's good. You know, and then.
Mm-hmm.
If you can, obviously, we don't want to turn and run. That it triggers that predatory response, you know, and they're going to look at you like prey. So
okay.
And if it comes down to it, you know, fight like hell. You know, same thing with a black bear. If a black bear attacks you during the night, you know, comes in your tent and attacks you, then
mm-hmm.
the fight's on. It's a predatory attack, and you need to fight for your life. So.
Wow. I can't even imagine that scenario. I really can't. I mean, I can't even imagine, like you said in the beginning, a bear poking their head in your tent. I think most people can't fathom that happening.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
again.
The fight's on at that point.
Yeah.
So you just, you know, like, go for it. You know, you got nothing to lose. Because
right.
if you don't win that fight,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're going to be hauling your body out of there.
Oh, my gosh. Best thing for starting a fire? Best thing to have on you?
Best a big lighter.
A big lighter, okay.
Yeah.
It's easy.
So most people, once I teach them how to make a bow drill fire, they
mm-hmm.
never go in the woods without a lighter again. So.
Well, I can only
and
imagine.
And so what a lot of people don't understand is that even when a lighter gets wet, you
mm-hmm.
can there's certain techniques you can use to dry it out very quickly and use it. So
okay. What about if everything else?
That with your lighter.
What about if everything else is wet? I mean, you're getting poured on, and what do you do?
Yeah, so once again, preparation. So
mm-hmm.
we carry petroleum jelly mixed in with cotton balls, and we have those inside balloons. That's our main go-to tinder. And then we also carry fatwood sticks, which are resin-soaked pine.
Okay.
So even during a bad rainstorm, we can get a fire going.
Okay, now say that
you know,
again.
If you don't have that stuff.
Uh-huh.
Is that your next question?
Well, yeah, if you don't have it, but wait, you just described something kind of quickly. Cotton balls that have petroleum jelly on them. Right?
Yeah. So take a cotton ball, mix petroleum jelly in it.
Okay.
And that'll burn about 5 minutes by itself.
Oh, okay. That's great. And you put it inside a balloon.
Tinder, and then you want to waterproof it by putting in a balloon. And then you can just, the balloon burns as well. So you can just rip the balloon open and you burn the whole thing. So.
Oh, I love this. Okay. Now, if you don't have that, then what?
Yeah, so then you're going to be sourcing natural tinder. And so that's where the kind of the bushcraft stuff comes in, you know, about getting out there and trying different stuff.
Okay.
You know, you can find, you know, in our region we have pines. And so wet weather, what I'm looking for is I'm looking for either birch bark, I'm looking for fatwood, I'm looking for pine resin, I'm looking for pine needles that are dead but still on the branch because they're still going to have that waxy waterproof coating.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm going to be splitting out wood to get to the dry inner wood, and then I'm making feather curls out of that.
Excellent. Okay, now you've gotten lost, and you want to make sure that people know what trail you've taken. How would you designate that? How would you leave behind those breadcrumbs, so to speak, to show where you've been?
Yeah, so I call it leave more trace, right? So there's leave no trace, but the moment that you're lost, that's when you want to leave more trace, right? And so on my lighter, I have duct tape, right? I have high visibility duct tape. It's yellow.
Okay.
And so not only is that a great fire starter, but I can use it on my blisters. If I get blisters, I can use it as a Band-Aid for a cut on my hand. But then I can also rip off a little piece of that, and I can put it on the tree, you know, like on a twig or something. I just fold it over, and I stick it to, like, flagging. Also, you can always carry surveyor's flagging. The old school tricks, if you're off trail, what I tell people to do is start blazing trees, and that's take your knife and you skin a tree, and it shows the white inner bark. Actually breaking branches, right? So as you're going in the direction of travel, you break branches in the direction of traveling. And the reason why that's important, if you're actually lost, we don't want to do that just for fun.
I would hope.
Kind of tearing up the woods.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're lost, me as a tracker, if I'm coming through there, at least in our region, what we have a lot of times is we find disturbance. We don't get to see footprints because we've got leaf litter. And so when we see that disturbance, is this a bear or is this a human? And so we start following it. And so I've got to eliminate, all right, am I following a bear trail? Am I following a human trail? And if I see a tree that's skinned up by a knife and I see branches that are broken, you know, at human height, then very quickly I can determine that. But even someone that's not very well trained can determine that as well. They're going to be like, okay, this person's traveling this direction. I'm following this sign.
Love it.
You know, they blaze these trees, they flag this vegetation.
So make sure your kids have a whistle, a garbage sack, and know what to do with it, and also yellow duct tape so they could blaze a trail, I mean, in that way, so that they could leave that trace.
Yeah, or orange duct tape, just high visibility.
Okay. Yeah. Boy, I love this. I love these tips. I'm so grateful for you, Andrew.
Trip plan. That's a big thing that I tell everyone. That's leave a plan of where you're going, what time you're supposed to be back.
Okay.
And then also it tells people, like, the if I'm not back by this time, call 911 or the local dispatch number for whatever you're kind of recreating.
And if you're hiking, please, this is the time to use common sense. And so make sure you have water, make sure you have the jacket, and make sure you're prepared, even though you think it might be a day hike, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. And the other thing on the gear stuff real quick is the satellite messengers, the personal locator beacons, the technology that we have nowadays. You can press a button, it sends a signal up to a satellite, that comes back down to the Air Force Rescue Command Center. They get a hold of us, they give us your exact coordinates.
Oh,
now, in
excellent.
That scenario, we can go exactly to you, and we'll come do that at night because we have exact coordinates.
Excellent. So. Andrew Harrington, BigPigOutdoors.com. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you. Be faithful, be fearless. See you back here on Monday. Great guest next week. You got to join us, KateDallyRadio.com. Have a great weekend.
Home Flooring Connection.